Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, August 6, 2025, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. We'll be coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch ND for 30 days, and also on my YouTube channel at Radio Naturopath. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. So how you feeling?
Oh, I got a pain in the neck.
But you're not wearing your collar.
I'm collarless. Whoa. Yes, it's all true.
Aren't you officially not collarless tomorrow?
Yeah.
But you're unofficially not collarless now.
I pushed the limits of the collarless generation, yes.
Does it feel better?
It feels like my neck can breathe again.
Wow.
It feels a little weird because, you know, I don't have the support that I've had.
Yeah.
But I'm moving my head around a lot more, so that's good.
Yeah.
I think that's good.
Right.
Yeah, I've been doing some PT stuff, you know, different, you know, yeses and nos and, you know, that sort of thing.
Yes.
And then shoulder shrugs.
Neck
stuff.
Lots
of shoulder shrugs.
And shoulder shrugs.
Shoulder shrugs and rolls, shoulder rolls to try to get. Because it's all the muscles are the real problem. It's not. And the fact, of course, that I have a lack of mobility in my neck now because I've got, you know, 16 screws and 2 titanium rods in there. So there's a lot of hardware in there.
Will that mobility increase?
Marginally.
Really? So you're not going to have as much mobility.
Oh, no.
So when you get back on the bike, you're going to be using mirrors.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mirrors and radar.
Mirrors and radar. Yeah. I find the radar very useful.
I love the radar.
Yeah, it's really
I
handy.
I think the radar is the best thing that's ever happened.
Yeah, it's really nice.
I think that's a huge boom in the industry, for sure.
Right. It's very cool. I enjoy using it. I know if somebody's behind me.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't always work. Sometimes it misses.
And sometimes it misinforms when there's
and sometimes
no one
it says there's somebody there and there's not. Yeah.
Right.
Because it's a frog.
Well, or whatever. But what I find is if it does misinform by the fact that, you know, there isn't anybody there, it will immediately make me look down at my mirror. So I'll be able to see if someone's
there. Yeah.
So you're safe. It's just a fail safe. It works.
That's
and
good.
When it does work, it works really good.
So you are still, you know, you're working on, you know, you're out and about in the yard and you're not written to go back to work yet.
Correct.
Right, which is frustrating.
Very frustrating.
Yeah, but you can go to one of your jobs because they don't require you to be written back in.
That's correct.
But the town wants you to get written in. So you're going to see the doctor.
The town has more... they have a stricter policy for HR.
Yeah, well, they're concerned about you, and they have insurance issues and stuff like
that. Yeah, I think they're more concerned about the insurance issues than they are about me, but that's beside the point.
Oh, well.
They would all like me back right now.
That's coming next week.
The 11th, yes.
Week from, not this week, but the week after.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so very good.
It's a Monday, I think. It's the 11th.
The 11th, yes, that is correct.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. Because we're recording a week before that. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So very good. So, and you've been on the recumbent bike at the community center.
Uh-huh.
And you did a very short ride in the driveway.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you're not on the road, not on the rail trail. Yeah.
I will maybe venture down to the end of the road and back at some point.
Oh, dear.
But.
I've been riding myself, so you met me at the co-op yesterday. That was kind of fun. So that was nice. So shout out to Scott and Debbie Livingston, who I didn't recognize right away, but then did in their horse kits, and got to see them because they were on a great big, he was on a much bigger ride than she was. But she still went 33 miles, and he would have a metric because they're preparing for a gravel ride next week. They are. They are hardcore.
They're hardcore. They're very fit people.
Yes, but they're very nice people. Mm-hmm. So, and their kids are like growing up. It's crazy. The shepherd is going to graduate from high school and Dahlia is like a teenager. I can't even believe it. What are you going to do?
I don't know.
So as far as me, I got a couple things. I tried to increase my dose of lisinopril and I lasted about a week. Mm-hmm. And then I had an episode in my office where I was on 7.5 milligrams lisinopril and I was sitting with a patient. I felt like I was going to pass out. Mm-hmm. So I said, that's that. Can't do that. So I'm going to back down to 5 milligrams. So I backed down to 5 milligrams and I feel better. That didn't happen again. So I have a choice of either trying to take a different med, which I might do, and also trying to continue to use other means. One of the things I discovered was thyme. Thyme the herb, T-H-Y-M-E. Mm. So thyme is helpful for lowering blood pressure. So I bought thyme tea, thyme tincture, and I got thyme powder that I put on my salad. Right. And I'll probably put on my food. And thyme tastes very pleasant. It's a mint. So guess what? It tastes minty.
Right.
And thyme, last night I had some thyme tea. I also had a peach tea that is mostly actually hibiscus. So I had hibiscus and thyme tea last night, and I took my blood pressure, and it was lower than I've seen it in a long time.
How about that?
So that's very interesting. So I may just continue with the thyme and hibiscus tea and see how that goes.
Right, because you have no time for high blood pressure.
No! Right, that's funny. But, I mean, it's really confusing when you have hypertension. You don't want to have hypertension because it's, you know, you have an increased risk of heart attack and stroke. But on the other hand, it's not acceptable to me to be sitting with a patient and feel like I'm going to pass out.
No.
And I could actually, in fact, pass out. And I don't want to go there. And so a lot of people don't like to take blood pressure medicine for that reason. So that's why even if you're on a med, it's a good idea to do everything you can to get your blood pressure down. My mother was bragging to me last night about how low her blood pressure is, and she's on Losartan, and she is eating absolutely no sugar. Now, I'm pretty sure she's eating some artificial sweeteners, but she's not eating any sugar, only the sugar in fruit.
Well, sugar is a beast.
Yes. And so when she does absolutely no sugar, then her blood pressure stays low. And I think she's avoiding caffeine as well. She insisted that that her age and my stress from work were equivalent. I tend to question that. That was very interesting because I have this problem that, you know, I'm self-employed and I have to work a lot, and there are times when I'm feeling tired and stressed that I have to keep going and pushing myself. She didn't really have anything like that in her life because retired, right?
Right.
You know. So anyway, it was interesting, but that
I'm
is
retired. I still have all that.
That was fair, but you're working. You're not really retired. But that was very interesting to me that she's not eating any sugar at all, and she finds that when she avoids sugar, her blood pressure is very low. And it's true that sugar can increase inflammation and can increase the tension of your blood vessels. That what you want to do is relax the tautness of your blood vessels. You want your blood vessels to behave more in a more elastic fashion. And so when your blood vessels are inflamed, even a little bit from the amount of sugar that you might be eating, they're going to tend to be tighter. And so when you have vasoconstriction, your blood pressure is going to tend to be higher. When you have vasodilation, tends to be lower. So thyme can help with vasodilation. Hibiscus, I believe, hibiscus relaxes you. It has melatonin in it, and it has flavonoids in it, which strengthens the blood vessels. Thyme, I mean, that's pretty serious because, I mean, for me to see the numbers that I was seeing last night, thyme, you have to be careful with the thyme. Again, I'm talking about thyme the herb, T-H-Y-M-E, not thyme as in the timer that I'm looking at right now. But you could try thyme tea. But do monitor your blood pressure and monitor yourself and see if you feel lightheaded or dizzy. I thought I felt a little bit lightheaded last night. I'm okay now, and I did ride my bike. I rode my bike the last 3 days. So that's the other thing in terms of my stenosis. I am able to get back on the bike, and it's gradually getting better. I'm going to have a second opinion this week to see about, to see if it's, if I'm a candidate, because the first opinion I got was that I am not a candidate for laminectomy. I'm not a candidate for minimally invasive surgery. I want to see if I'm a candidate for minimally invasive surgery by another opinion. So that's happening this week. So I'll report on that next week. And I'm psyched because the appointment is in Glastonbury and I get to go to Glastonbury and go to Trader Joe's and stuff.
So can I rewind on something?
Yeah.
So you were off on a tangent about time and you got to be careful with time because we never got the answer.
Oh, because it really... Yes, you can take too much. Well, because my blood pressure was low enough that you have to monitor your blood pressure. That's what I was saying, that you have to monitor your blood pressure and make sure it doesn't go too low and make sure that you're not lightheaded and dizzy.
Right.
That's what I said, yeah. So so it's the real deal. It does definitely calm things down. There's some possibility that it does have some ACE inhibition activity, which is similar to the drug that I'm taking. So it calms angiotensin converting enzyme so that you don't make as much aldosterone, and aldosterone makes you hold on to salt in your body. Salt makes you hold on to water, which raises your blood pressure. So when you interrupt that cycle, then you lose more water, you have less blood volume. And the bradykinins that the lisinopril releases also relax your blood vessels. So there's a couple of mechanisms there. All right, so I'm not 100% sure I'm going to stay with the lisinopril because I can't go above 5 milligrams, and 5 milligrams by itself without me doing anything else is not enough to lower my blood pressure significantly. So I may have to switch to a different med, and I don't know if the different med, the problem with meds, taking blood pressure meds, is that they biochemically lower your blood pressure and they don't care if you need blood your blood pressure to rise in order to, say, stand up, climb a hill, go for a walk, get excited. So at a time when your blood pressure is trying to rise because you're responding to something in your body, because normal for your systolic blood pressure to go up when you're responding to something, when you're exercising. And if it's artificially suppressed, it can make you dizzy. So you can't, so it's like your body is fighting against itself. You're trying to stand up and your blood pressure is supposed to rise to get the circulation into your head and into your extremities so you can comfortably stand up. And the your blood pressure is too low for that to happen. So you try to do something and you get lightheaded. Your body's like, no, there's not enough blood in your head. You have to sit back down. So you feel faint. And to me, it's not, if that happened to me while I'm lying in bed, that's one thing. But if it happens to me while I'm sitting with a patient, I have to, not work, excuse myself, hopefully not pass out in front of the patient. That's not acceptable. So this is a struggle that people who take blood pressure meds experience. Now, some people take blood pressure meds, they work, no problem. But so far, not me. It's an issue. So shout out to Terry, who is listening. Hi, Terry. And she's happy that you're feeling better, Ron. Terry is.
That's good.
So that's what's going on there. I'm going to go ahead and have that second opinion and see what they say. And I also was talking to my friend Stephanie, who's an acupuncturist, and she said that she worked with a doctor in Arizona who had an injection called Sarapin. I'm not sure what the Sarapin is an extract of a certain plant, and that is an injection, an anti-inflammatory injection that people use, and it's not cortisone, so it doesn't have the breakdown effects that cortisone has. It's just anti-inflammatory. And I asked her if she knew how well it worked, and she didn't entirely know. And so I looked around to see if somebody injects Sarapin in Connecticut, and I think it's available, but it's available far from here. So if I wanted to do it, I could go to Wallingford or I could go further downstate. But I'm not going to do that unless I know that that they get really good results. So meanwhile, I'm looking around at who does injections, and I found in Glastonbury a doc that I used to see, Dr. Tortland, who's on the same street as the other doc I'm going to see. And he does injections that are not cortisone. So they're basically saline and anesthetic. And the goal is to make space for where your pinched nerve is. So I'm assuming that they make space where you have a stenosis. So Depending on the outcome of my appointment on Wednesday, I might go in to see Dr. Tortland. And the thing is, depending on the outcome of Wednesday, if they say, let's give it a little more time, maybe you should get another injection, because I can't get another cortisone injection until October 3rd, because it's 3 months. I don't know if I want to get another, because if I'm feeling okay, I don't want to get another cortisone injection, because I think the cortisone riled me up a little bit. And I think the cortisone affected my blood pressure and my heart rhythm. And the problem with cortisone is it breaks down tissue. That's why you can't get a lot of them all the time.
Naturally, so causes a lot of problems.
Right. So you want to avoid getting cortisone if you can. But on the other hand, if it takes away, it really interrupted my awful pain cycle. It was very helpful when I did get it. And the person who gave it to me was very skilled, and I was very pleased about the outcome. But I still do have numbness and tightness on the lateral side of my left leg, but it's not preventing me from riding my bike. And I rode on, and I think I really need to ride with compression. Today I decided to ride without compression on the left leg, and that was dumb. So I think I need to ride with compression on that left leg. I need the compression on the right leg for the knee, but the left leg needs the compression. It feels better when I have compression on it. So we're probably going to have to do some ice later. So that's fine. So anyway, all interesting stuff like that. So let's talk about some other stuff that might be able to help you out. I've had a few patients come in who have high triglycerides, specifically triglycerides. So what are triglycerides? Triglycerides are it's a type of fat that's found in your blood. After you eat, your body converts the calories you don't need right away into triglycerides and stores them in your fat cells to be used for energy later. And when you eat, they're the first place they go. They get converted in your bloodstream. So if you have high fasting triglycerides, it means your body's not doing a very good job of storing the triglycerides that are in your blood, and you're making a lot of them, and your triglycerides are going to be higher if you eat a lot of sugar, carbohydrates, and poor quality fats like trans fats. So your body will convert those calories into triglycerides and store them in your fat cells to be used for energy later. They're an important energy supply for your body, but having too many of them can increase your risk of cardiovascular disease. About 26% of adults in the United States have elevated blood triglycerides, which is classified as triglycerides over 150 milligrams per deciliter. When you're obese, or if you have diabetes that's unmanaged, when you regularly drink alcohol and you eat too many calories, that can all contribute to high triglycerides. You can lower your triglyceride levels with various dietary and lifestyle changes. So how do you do that? Aim for a healthy for you weight, whatever that is. That doesn't mean lose 1,000 pounds. That doesn't mean go on some crazy diet, but aim for a body weight that works for you. And the way to do that, this is a whole other podcast, but to aim for a healthy diet, the best thing to do is eat a diet that's going to lower your triglycerides. So what does that look like? That basically means eating whole foods, eating unprocessed foods, foods with no junk in it, fruits, vegetables, nuts, seeds, clean protein, dairy if you tolerate it, you know, low-fat or non-fat dairy if you tolerate it, maybe even whole-fat dairy if you tolerate that, and just eating it and just staying away from refined carbohydrates, excess sugar, too much alcohol, and all of those things. So those things can bring you to a lower weight, but the weight that you're at is not as important as you eating that diet. So if you want to measure your weight, you could do that if you want to, but eating a heart healthy, a person healthy diet is more important than whatever weight you wind up at. So people really need to stop focusing on weight loss. And unfortunately, we have an incredible culture of weight loss in our country. And of course, we have these drugs where people are taking these injections to help them lose weight. And the way that they wind up losing the weight is basically by eating less. And they may be eating a healthy diet, and they may not be, but they don't have an appetite, and that's why they don't eat. But these drugs cause you to lose lean mass as well. So that's why I'm really nervous about those drugs. Now, if you are morbidly obese, like extremely obese, like you have a BMI in the 30s or 40s, maybe you want to consider that at least for a while. The thing is, people tend to go on these drugs, and if they ever decide to come off them, they gain the weight back. So it is so much better for you to change how you eat and get exercise and, you know, reduce stress and stop eating junk, stop eating processed food. Food with the chemicals in food can be part of what's causing the weight gain. Like if you eat an isocaloric diet of junk food versus all healthy food, you're going to lose weight. That's been studied, that you're going to lose more weight on the healthy food diet than you are on the food. If it's the same amount of calories, you're going to lose more weight if you eat all whole foods than if you eat junky foods. So please be aware of that. Your fruits and vegetables, nuts and seeds, clean protein, clean dairy, legumes, those are all your friends. You know, you have to figure out which foods agree with you. If you have a gluten issue, if you have a dairy issue, that's fine. You don't have to eat dairy to be healthy. And on the other hand, if you can tolerate dairy, you can eat some dairy. I don't like to tell people to go overboard on dairy, because, especially women, because dairy has whey and casein in it, which tend to increase your insulin and lead to weight gain. But if you can eat some dairy and be at a healthy weight, that's fine. I mean, I like to put a tiny bit, and I don't like to eat dairy every day because I think I have some level of sensitivity to it, but I'll put a few, like last night, a few crumbles of goat cheese on my great big salad, and I'll have a few little pieces of grass-fed cheese on my salad. And frequently I'll have dairy substitute cheese, like cheese substitute instead. And so a lot of days of the week, that's what I'll do instead. But just because I like the texture and I like the taste, real dairy, of course, tastes better. But so to get your triglycerides down, it's the same thing that you do just to be healthy in general. It's the same healthy diet will help lower your triglycerides. Limit sugar. Sugar will increase your triglycerides. The American Heart Association recommends consuming no more than 100 to 150 calories of added sugar a day. There was a study that found the average American eats about 308 calories of added sugar a day. It's found in sweets, soft drinks, fruit juice. Extra sugar in your diet may be turned into triglycerides, which can lead to an increase in blood triglyceride levels, along with heart disease risk factors. One study included almost 7,000 people found that those who consumed sugar-sweetened beverages regularly were over 50% more likely to have high triglycerides than those who did not. So sugar-sweetened beverages, one of the places that we see this a lot is in the South, because it's hot there and you get tired of drinking plain water. So you'll go to the convenience store where they have that soda fountain, and then you'll get a great big soda. And that great big soda, and a great big soda with lots of ice in it, you know, right here. I mean, I enjoy getting one of those once in a while. When I go get my gas, you know, I go into the convenience store and I get the soda from the soda fountain. It's so refreshing. But that's why I do it once in a while. You know, the caffeine is not good for me either. So, but if you have a steady diet of that, like most days you go in and you get one of those, that's going to cause weight gain. There's high fructose corn syrup in that sugar, which goes right to your liver and easily gets converted to triglycerides. So sugary drinks could be your soda. It could be bottled iced tea. It could be too much fruit juice. Like when I drink fruit juice in the morning, I drink an 100% juice and a quarter cup, and that's it. And that's all I have for the day. And I probably am going to stop doing that and just eat a piece of fruit. The thing with eating fruit is it takes longer than drinking the juice if I'm in a rush. But I may just stop that and just start eating some fruit in the morning. Because the fruit has so much, a serving of fruit is satisfying. It has fiber in it. It has so much less in calories and sugar, and it tastes good. You know, like a third, and if you do isocaloric juice to fruit, the fruit's going to have way more fiber in it and way more flavonoids and a lot more of the stuff that you need. And it won't have been pasteurized. Because remember that juice, most juice that you get, unless it says that it's raw and it has been pasteurized, because it has to be pasteurized because it'll have a longer shelf life. But you can get raw juices, and you'll know them because they don't last more than a couple of days in your fridge. Then there was another study that found that that having high amounts of sugar, oh, I'm sorry, there was another place that of sugary drinks that you get, and that's when you go to the cafe and you get those sugary lattes and frappes and and you know those special sugary drinks that we got when we went to that place on Saturday. So again, we don't do that frequently. I mean, we do that maybe once a week or less, but that's another place you get it. Like, if you enjoy caffeinated beverage, start learning to like it without sugar, with less sugar. I always talk about, if you like to drink coffee, put a bunch of cinnamon into it. Cinnamon is great for blood sugar and triglycerides and cholesterol. And if you and you can add it to hot coffee or cold coffee, and you might not need as much sweetener or any sweetener at all if you add cinnamon. And you can use stuff like stevia or monk fruit if you want to help sweeten your beverage, and then it won't raise your triglycerides. So high amounts of added sugar is associated with high triglycerides in kids. There are studies that show that low-carb diets can lead to a decrease in blood triglyceride levels. So it doesn't have to be a truly low-carb diet. I mean, you could be, you don't have to like have only vegetables and meat. It doesn't have to be that kind of diet, although that may lower your triglycerides. But you can eat fruit, not to excess. Always eat more vegetables than fruit, but have some fruit. And you can eat small amounts of whole grains. So have some quinoa or brown rice, or have a small amount of oatmeal with a lot of berries and nuts and seeds in it. And that's better for you than if you ate, you know, sugary treats. A slight change, like replacing your sugar-sweetened beverages with water, could decrease triglycerides in some people. So if you have a big sweetened beverage habit, getting out of that sweetened beverage habit can really improve your triglycerides. So if you eat a lower-carb diet, when you eat extra calories from carbs in your diet, they can get converted to triglycerides and stored in your fat cells. Low-carb diets have been linked to lower blood triglyceride levels. There was a review of some randomized controls studies that found that people following reduced carb diets usually saw a reduction in triglycerides of at 6 months, 12 months, and in 2 years. Across the studies, triglyceride levels decreased the most 6 months after starting a reduced calorie diet. Well, that makes sense, because you've made a dramatic change, so they'll drop the most, and then if you stay on that diet, they're not going to drop so much more. There was a review that compared fat and low-carb diets. It was found that 6 to 12 months after starting relatively low-fat versus low-carb diets, those on the low-carb diets had greater decreases in triglycerides than on the low-fat diet. So it's sugar and carbs that raise your triglycerides. By the way, they also raise LDL, low-density lipoprotein. Eating more fiber. So the same things that lower your triglycerides are also going to lower your LDL cholesterol, your low-density lipoprotein cholesterol. That's the protein that carries cholesterol from your liver to your body for use. So that will be lower if you do all the same things that lower triglycerides: getting more exercise, eating more fiber. So dietary fiber is naturally found in fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and other plant sources like nuts, seeds, cereals, and legumes. If you have more fiber in your diet, it can slow the absorption of fat and sugar in your small intestine, which can help your triglyceride levels. There is a study of 117 adults who are overweight or obese, and when they ate more dietary fiber, it was linked to lower triglyceride levels. And there was a study in adolescents that found that having a high fiber cereal with a breakfast high in fat reduced post-meal triglyceride increases. So any increases from the fat were mitigated by the fiber. Getting regular exercise, when paired with weight loss, studies show that aerobic exercise is especially effective for decreasing triglycerides. That's what I tell my patients, that triglycerides are best lowered with cardio exercise. I mean, it's certainly very important to do resistance training and doing things like yoga and body weight resistance, but cardio exercise, 30 minutes of aerobic activity 5 days a week. And so that's going to be at moderate levels. You don't have to kill yourself doing it. But if you walk, jog, cycle, or swim for at least half an hour, 5 days a week, probably because I don't always get my cardio in 5 days a week, but I get longer cardio. on one of those days. So today I was out for 40 minutes. So it adds up over the course of the week, because the recommendation is 150 minutes a week. So I get that probably in 4 days, at least that much. So you could do it that way too. Like if your schedule doesn't work out, that it's easy for you to do cardio exercise 5 days a week, then do a little bit more over the course of 4 days in a week. So the benefits of exercise on triglycerides are apparent in long-term exercise regimens. There was a study with people with heart disease who showed that exercising for 45 minutes 5 days a week led to a significant decline in blood triglycerides. All exercise helps reduce triglyceride levels, but there's research that's found that exercising at a higher intensity for a shorter amount of time is more effective than exercising at moderate intensity for longer periods. So if you want to exercise less days, you want to kick it for part of your workout. Limit trans fats, especially artificial ones. There's going to be some trans fats in that fish you ate or the meat that you eat, but but we're talking about the trans fats that are created by commercially fried foods. So this is going to be your chips and your baked goods, and they're made with partially hydrogenated oils, or when you get deep fried stuff at the fast food place or at the restaurant. And the trans fats can be found in small amounts in some animal products, but you're going to have more trans fats in anything that's been that has seed oils and hydrogenated oils that has been heated at high levels. The addition of trans fats to foods has been banned in the United States. So you can't add things that are already trans fats. So you can't add a margarine, for example, that's known to have trans fats, and it can't add it to food anymore. Because of the inflammatory properties, they've been attributed to many health problems, including raised LDL cholesterol and heart disease. There was a review of 16 studies that found that replacing trans fats with polyunsaturated fats could reduce triglyceride levels. So a polyunsaturated fat, definitely monounsaturated fats. So that's going to be your olive oil and your nut and seed oils, some seed oils like sunflower oil and avocado and its oil. And raw organic cocoa, all of those things have monounsaturated fats that can lower triglyceride levels. Eat some fatty fish at least twice a week. So that's because of the omega-3 fatty acids, and omega-3 fatty acids are polyunsaturated. And it's an essential fat, which means your body doesn't make it, that you have to eat it. And the Dietary Guidelines for Americans and the American Heart Association recommend 2 servings of fatty fish per week to reduce the risk of heart disease and stroke. And there was a study in 2016 that showed that eating salmon twice a week significantly decreased blood triglyceride concentration. Salmon, herring, sardines, tuna, and mackerel are a number of fish that are especially high in omega-3 fatty acids. I've been getting herring and wine sauce from the fish market.
Don't forget about my avocados.
I already talked about that. Yeah, thank you. Studies show that monounsaturated and polyunsaturated fats can reduce blood triglyceride levels, especially when they're replacing carbs in your diet. Monounsaturated fats are found in foods like olive oil, nuts, and avocados. Mm. Polyunsaturated fats are in vegetable oils and in fatty fish like nuts and seeds like walnuts, flax seeds, and chia seeds. So he eats a lot of flax seeds and I eat a lot of chia seeds. There was a 2019 review of a bunch of studies that reported that while olive oil consumption does decrease triglyceride levels, it does so significantly less than other types of plant oil. There was an older study that analyzed the diets of over 400 adults in a specific population of indigenous people in Alaska over the previous 24 hours and found that saturated fat intake was associated with increased blood triglycerides, while polyunsaturated fat was associated with lower triglyceride levels. So to maximize your triglyceride-lowering benefits of unsaturated fats, you can pick up heart-healthy fat like olive oil and use it to replace other types of fat in your diet, such as trans fats or highly processed vegetable oils. Eat a regular meal pattern. After you eat a meal, the cells in your pancreas send a signal to release insulin in the bloodstream. Insulin is then responsible for transporting sugar to your cells to be used for energy. If you have too much insulin in your blood, your body can become resistant to it, making it difficult for your body to use insulin effectively. That can lead to a buildup of both sugar and triglycerides in your blood. So if you set a regular eating pattern, it can help prevent insulin resistance and high triglycerides. So if you don't eat breakfast, it can lead to decreased insulin sensitivity. So that's one of the problems with intermittent fasting. Some people could wind up having higher triglycerides from intermittent fasting. So the American Heart Association suggested that irregular eating patterns seem less likely to achieve healthy cardiometabolic levels and recommend eating at regular times. But it's mixed when it comes to meal frequency. There was a study that showed that eating 3 meals a day significantly decreased triglycerides compared with eating 6 meals a day, meaning that you have some breaks between your meals. But there are many other studies that show that changes in meal frequency don't significantly affect triglyceride concentration. Regardless of how many meals you've eaten, eating regular meals can improve insulin sensitivity and lower blood triglyceride levels. I find that if I eat regular meals, I'm less likely to snack, especially if there's fiber and protein and fat in my meals. That I noticed that I've been better about eating a real breakfast and eating a good lunch, and then I just don't snack as much during the day just because I'm not hungry. Alcohol can raise your triglycerides. And so alcohols can be high in sugar, carbs, and calories. If the calories remain unused, they can be converted into triglycerides and stored in fat cells. And alcohol also makes your metabolism lazy. Alcohol gets converted into acyl-CoA, which goes right into the Krebs cycle, so it makes it so that your body is less likely to burn fat as a fuel. So alcohol can also increase the synthesis of large, very low-density lipoproteins in the liver, which can carry triglycerides into your system. So the VLDL is a triglyceride transporter. So if you have reduced VLDL, the triglycerides are going to get kicked out into your bloodstream. So there's a lot of factors that come into play. Some studies show that moderate alcohol consumption can increase blood triglycerides by up to 53%, even if your triglycerides are normal to begin with. Other research has linked light to moderate alcohol consumption to reduce risk of heart disease, while linking binge drinking to an increased risk. Soy protein can be helpful if you tolerate it. It's rich in isoflavones, which are a type of plant compound with numerous health benefits. It's known for its role in lowering LDL or bad cholesterol. Soy protein has been shown to reduce blood triglyceride levels. There is a review of 46 studies that found that regular consumption of soy protein was linked to significantly lower triglyceride levels in postmenopausal women. It can be found in foods like soybean, like edamame, tofu, tempeh, and soy milk. Eat more tree nuts if you're not allergic to them. They have monounsaturated fats in them. And they have unsaturated fats, all of which work together to lower your triglycerides. There was a study of 61. There were 61 studies that showed that a daily serving of tree nuts decreased triglycerides by an average of 2.2 milligrams per deciliter, which is a little bit. So, I mean, if your triglycerides are 100, it'll reduce it to 98, which isn't bad. There was another review of 49 studies that showed that eating tree nuts is associated with a modest decrease in blood triglycerides. Those would be almonds, pecans, walnuts, cashews, pistachios, Brazil nuts, and macadamia nuts. And did they say hazelnuts? Hazelnuts too. However, nuts are high in calories. A single serving of almonds, or about 23 of them, has around 164 calories, so eat them in moderation. Most studies have found that the greatest health benefits in individuals who consume 3 to 7 servings of nuts a week. So talk to a healthcare professional about natural supplements. So some supplements have the potential to lower triglycerides. Note especially that the FDA does not regulate supplements in the same way it regulates pharmaceuticals, and quality can vary widely, which is why it's a good idea to come to a naturopathic physician or to a nutritionist or a physician of some kind or nutritionist who specializes in knowing the quality and has an understanding of how supplements work. So fish oil is known for its health effects, its potent effects on heart health. It's rich in omega-3 fatty acids, which have been shown to decrease triglycerides and several other risk factors for heart disease. Fenugreek, it's used traditionally to stimulate milk production in women. Fenugreek seeds have also been helpful in lowering triglycerides, and it helps to regulate blood sugar as well. Vitamin D, if you have adequate vitamin D in your blood, which I like to see around 50 nanograms per milliliter, vitamin D supplementation can help reduce overall triglyceride levels. So if your vitamin D is low, you might tend to have higher triglycerides. Curcumin. There was a review of 7 studies that found that curcumin supplements can cause a significant drop in triglyceride and LDL. So dietary and lifestyle factors can have a major influence on your triglyceride levels. If you eat healthy, unsaturated fats instead of trans fats, decrease your intake of carbs and added sugars, and exercise regularly, this can all help to lower triglycerides. With a few lifestyle modifications, you can decrease your triglycerides and improve overall health at the same time. You don't have to completely change your diet and lifestyle overnight. Experiment a few of these tips So, for example, start incorporating avocado into your diet. Start eating a few raw nuts and seeds a few days a week. And then over time, look at the list and then pick something else out that you want to try to implement. And all of these things can be really helpful. It's always a good idea to get regular exercise. And so what kind of exercise should you get? The one you'll do. If you like cardio, you can go for a walk. You can ride your bike. You can dance. You can do videos no charge videos on the internet that you can look at. You can take classes. You can walk around your yard. You can do yard work. There's a lot of things that you can do. So lowering triglycerides, having your triglycerides be lower is important. So you want to have a triglyceride level of no more than 150 nanograms per milliliter. So that's the triglycerides. All right, so I wanted to talk a little bit about stress reduction today because everybody's stressed. There's all kinds of reasons to be stressed, and there's some simple ways to reduce stress. So sit back, relax, take some deep breaths, and receive some information about how to reduce stress. There's all kinds of things that you can do. What does reducing stress help? I'll give you a hint. Everything. Chronic stress can increase your risk of health conditions like heart disease, anxiety, depression. If you can be genetically predisposed to being more stressed. I think that I have that going on, that my mother, my sister, and I, we tend to be a little more anxious than baseline. But there's a lot of reasons to be stressed anyway. I think also when you're postmenopausal, it's easier to get more anxious, that estrogen and progesterone tend to keep you a bit calmer, and you're more sensitive to cortisol when you get to peripostmenopausal times in your life. So stress, if you don't have a lot of social support, you can feel more stressed. The way that you cope with stress can cause you to experience more stress. Your personality type can contribute, and your personality type comes from genetics, as well as how you were raised, what your environment. Social discrimination due to race, gender, or perceived gender, if you are LGBTQIA, socioeconomic issues and other factors, if you have childhood trauma, and your profession can be stressful. So all of those things can contribute to the stressors that are going on in your life. Stress isn't the same thing as a mental health disorder, such as anxiety and depression. So stress is something that's kind of external that's going on in your life that you experience, whereas a mental health disorder is something like anxiety or depression. So how can you reduce stress? One is that you can increase your physical activity. There was a 6-week study of 185 university students who found that participating in aerobic exercise just 2 days a week significantly reduced overall perceived stress and perceived stress because of uncertainty. And the CDC, as we already said, recommends at least 150 minutes of moderate intensity exercise a week, as well as 2 days of muscle strengthening activity. If you're inactive, you can start with stuff that's gentle, walking or biking, and just for 20 minutes and just down the road and back. Choosing an activity you enjoy can help you to be more likely to do it in the long run. Eat a balanced diet. Again, you know, if you eat too much sugar, if you eat too much processed food, you're going to feel more stress. People who follow a diet that's high in ultra-processed foods and added sugar are more likely to experience higher perceived stress levels. And when you're chronically stressed, that may lead you to overeat and consume more ultra-processed foods. If you don't eat enough nutrient-dense whole foods, you may increase your risk of deficiencies in nutrients that are essential for regulating stress and mood, like magnesium and B vitamins. Minimizing your intake of highly processed foods and beverages and eating more whole foods can help ensure your body is properly nourished, and it may improve your resilience to stress. Whole foods. What are whole foods? Vegetables, fruit, beans, fish, nuts, seeds, clean protein in general. Minimize your screen time. Some people spend too much time on their screens, and I find that when I do too much screen, it's very hard on my brain, it's hard on my eyes, and I feel more stressed. And then when I close my eyes, and even if I want to, if I read a book, a paper book, it's relaxing. It's much more relaxing than looking at a screen. And right now I'm looking at three screens because I've got I've got my tablet that's recording the show, and I'm looking at another tablet that I'm using as an outline, and then I have Ron's computer over there that's actually recording the show. So the screen, and then I'm gonna have to process the show, so it's a lot of screen time. And when I'm at the office, there's a lot of screen time as well. Screen time is hard. It's hard on your nervous system, it's hard on your vagus nerve. So if you can minimize screen time, if you can have times of days where you take breaks from screens, and if you can shut down your screen time at the end of the day and have some time without screens, it's so relaxing for your eyes and your brain and your nervous system. Practicing self-care. It doesn't have to be elaborate or complicated, and it can be something you do for yourself at home or at the office. It just means tending to your well-being and happiness. It lowers your levels of stress and improves your quality of life. That can be going for a walk outside, lighting candles, taking a bath, reading a good book, preferably on paper, getting exercise, preparing a healthy meal, getting a stretch before bed, getting massage, doing a hobby, using a diffuser with calming scents, and doing yoga. Those are all good ways of doing self-care. Try journaling if that's something you'd like to do. And again, if you journal, it might be a good idea to get a paper journal and write with a pen or a pencil, because again, you're not going to be using screens. And then you can draw pictures, you can use stickers, you can do fun things with a paper journal like that. I mean, you can journal on your computer if you want to, but again, then you're back to doing screens. So it's, you know, if you find it less stressful to type because you're better at typing than you are at handwriting, which, you know, I'm certainly, my handwriting has turned into chicken scratch over the years of writing very intensely and fast while I'm at the office. Consuming too much caffeine can worsen your experience of stress. If you overconsume it, it can harm your sleep, which can also increase stress. Coffee does have health benefits in moderation. It's recommended to keep caffeine intake under 400 milligrams a day, which is like 4 or 5 cups of coffee. And I have patients who drink so much coffee. I mean, if you can drink coffee and get good sleep and it doesn't stress you out, then I don't have a problem with it, and especially if it's organic and there's no pesticides or antibiotics in it. But I couldn't possibly. One cup of coffee will probably guarantee that I won't sleep that night, unless I've gotten a lot of exercise. So, I mean, I don't tend to have full strength coffee, and I've been on a kick where I'm not doing any coffee at all right now. So the other thing is that if you're drinking coffee and you want to have some caffeine, you might want to consider switching to tea, or like matcha tea or green tea, because those teas have less caffeine, a fair bit, like a good half to a third, two-thirds less caffeine than a cup of coffee. And tea, the Camellia sinensis plant, whether it's black, green, or white tea, has L-theanine in it, and theanine is calming. So you don't get the same kind of kick that you get from drinking coffee. Spending time with loved ones. So when I've had these health issues, I haven't been spending as much time with friends and going out as much. And I find that when I get to see people, I feel better. So having a social support system is good. And so having a social support system can be an independent factor for having better mental health and a better experience of stress. And it also is an independent factor for cardiovascular disease, that if you have good social support, you're less likely to have cardiovascular disease, or, you know, problems with your cardiovascular disease will go better. There was a study in 2019 of Latin college age adults associated with lower levels of support from friends, family, and romantic partners with higher perceived stress. If you don't have friends or family to depend on, social support groups may be helpful. Consider joining a club, sports team, volunteer, go to church, synagogue, temple, go to yoga class, go to somewhere where there's a group. I mean, we go to the Willimantic Food Co-op. We went there yesterday and we saw so many people that we know. I mean, if we're like, we don't have plans to socialize with anybody, just showing up at the co-op you're going to see all kinds of people that you know. And it was fun. On the other hand, sometimes you need to do less stuff and you have to create boundaries and say no. So be selective about what you take on. Saying no to things will unnecessarily add to your load. You can reduce your stress levels by saying no, by taking more time to rest. When you create boundaries, especially with people who add to stress levels, it's a healthy way to protect your well-being. It can be simple as saying to a friend or family that they shouldn't stop by unannounced, or take a rain check on plans if you're feeling overwhelmed. Try not to procrastinate if you can help it. Procrastination can cause stress, which negatively affects your health and sleep quality, and you might be more likely to procrastinate in times of stress as a coping mechanism. There was a study in 140 medical students linked procrastination to increased stress levels. If you find that you're doing that a lot, it may be helpful to make a to-do list and give yourself realistic deadlines and work your way down the list in order of priority. Sometimes adding an item to the list may help you feel better about it, even if it doesn't get done immediately. And the other thing, if it's on the list, because on the one thing, you may be procrastinating because you really need the downtime. You can think about the list and say, you know what, I don't have to get this done today, and do take the downtime. I mean, I'm guilty of that a little bit, that there will be days when I have a lot of unstructured time and I'll sit and lay around instead of getting stuff done. Because I like to, it feels better to have stuff done and then relax. Although it is a good idea to do a task and then take breaks. So it's whatever strategy works for you. But I do find that when I procrastinate on tasks that I want to do, it sort of puts off the time that I get to rest. Specifically, taking yoga reduces stress. There's research. You hear that, Angie? Research shows that yoga can help reduce stress and promote psychological well-being. You may also help lower your cortisol, blood pressure, and heart rate while increasing levels of GABA, gamma-aminobutyric acid, which is an inhibitory calming neurotransmitter that's low in people with mood disorders. And a lot of the compounds that we give people to help with anxiety, a lot of the natural medicine that we give, we actually give people GABA. You can get GABA in supplements. You can get Pharma GABA, which is it's enhanced to make it more absorbable. But things like L-theanine, which is the extract of green tea, as well as nerving herbs like oat straw and linden I don't know about hibiscus, but motherwort and ashwagandha all increase your GABA levels. And I have to be careful and taurine, the amino acid, increases GABA levels. That's one of the ways that they work. And I have to be careful how much I take because I'm sensitive to the, like, I can't take ashwagandha. It knocks me out. I can take L-theanine, though. It'll give me a little bit of a calm without overwhelming me. So you have to figure out what works for you. But a lot of the nervines increase, nervines, which are herbs that work to help your nerves. A lot of those herbs increase GABA. So taking a yoga class, yoga in general, helps to reduce stress, especially if you do yin or restorative yoga. I mean, any yoga class will help you reduce stress, I believe. I don't know about the really high level yoga really intense yoga, power yoga, that sort of thing. But yoga in general, it's certainly yin and restorative yoga, and just gentle yoga that's not necessarily yin or restorative, is going to help you to feel calmer overall. Practicing mindfulness. Stress reduction techniques use mindfulness, which includes meditation, mindfulness-based cognitive therapy. When you meditate consistently, even for short periods, it can help improve your mood and decrease symptoms of stress and anxiety. There's a lot of apps and websites you can use to help you with mindfulness meditation. Cuddle. So cuddling with anything, cuddling with a toy, but even better with a person or a pet is a really good thing, because when you cuddle and snuggle with a human or a pet, you release oxytocin and lower your cortisol. I think when you snuggle with even if you have a stuffed toy, a stuffed animal, I think that they cause you to release oxytocin too. Because you release oxytocin when you care for anything. So you know that one of the reasons I love to have the bird feeder is because we get to see the birds. And seeing birds, just experiencing animals in a positive way, even if you're not touching them, releases oxytocin. Because people who have any kind of pet experience stress reduction and experience bonding with that pet. So even if you have a snake or a tarantula or a fish as your pet, that still lowers, increases oxytocin and increases GABA and helps you and lowers your cortisol. So, but actually physical cuddling, where you're actually snuggling with someone you love or someone you care about, or with a pet, everybody releases oxytocin. The pet releases oxytocin, you release oxytocin. Spending time in nature. So spending time in nature could be walking around in nature. It could be riding a bike in nature. It could be setting a chair in your yard and staring at the trees and watching the birds. That counts as being in nature. Lying down in the grass, again, is experiencing nature. Just looking at trees, looking at green. So one of the things that happens when you are looking at a screen, you're focusing intensely on a small space. And that's hard on your brain. You're focusing on pixels. You're approximating the pixels together to interpret the image that you're seeing. And that's very hard on your nervous system and your brain. When you look outside, you are viewing what you're seeing panoramically. So it's a lot easier on your brain because you're not hyper-focusing on a small space. It's much better for you. So you know what? I think that we are out of time. I'm going to have to pick up at the next stress reducing activity. There's only a couple more, and then we'll pick up there. And I have some more stuff on stress reduction that we will pick up with next week. So I am going to have to let you go because it's that time. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, Buzzsprout, and YouTube. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS stores, and WHUS.org.